found money, how the Daniels administration misplaced hundreds of millions of dollars again. John Gregg's idea for lifting the sales tax on gasoline, residency questions for David McIntosh, and the latest in the Senate race. That plus a new opening on the state Supreme Court and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 6, 2012.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, there's a new scandal in state government. The Office of Management and Budget has discovered another $205 million that was misplaced by the Department of Revenue. OMB Director Adam Horst announced the finding, blaming it on a programming error. It follows the discovery last year of $320 million in missing corporate tax money. This week's find is money that will go to counties in a distribution of local income tax dollars. It means a $41 million payment for Indianapolis. There will now be an outside audit conducted at the Department of Revenue.
What I say is, in light of this second error, we believe that it's even more prudent to bring in additional resources so we can more aggressively investigate all the different errors and restore confidence in the functions of the Department of Revenue.
What does this second error do to the reputation of Mitch Daniels? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is this mistake excusable?
No, it's not. Neither was the other one. I mean, you've got a governor who prides himself on bringing business techniques to state government to make it more responsible. And it's not just half a billion, because this would have been a repeating error for next year. We're talking about almost $750 million that was misappropriated. Now, you know, for Mike Pence, that might be a rounding error, but in Indianapolis, that's a substantial amount of money. And the problem, it seems to me, that you have with this is if they had gone ahead and done what the Democrats called for last fall and done an outside audit, you would have found this faster, and local communities wouldn't have had to lay off people, which is what's happened as a result of this. But you have absolutely no confidence. You created this Office of Management and Budget to oversee the fiscal, and they not only haven't overseen it, this kind of mistake, if you want, has happened repeatedly. They need to do what the leaders of the legislature have called for, and that is to have a bipartisan committee select the auditor and then have that auditor report to that bipartisan committee, because I don't have any confidence in the Office of Management and Budget's recitation of what the findings are.
There are some red-faced folks at the State House.
Oh, I'm sure they're embarrassed. They ought to be. And I would have hated to have been the one that had to call the governor to tell him. I'm sure that didn't go well. You know, this is the kind of thing that is an embarrassment for them, clearly. And you got to remember that he's the one that sent OMB over there to do all the research on other activity after the first error was found. They're the ones who found it. He's dealing with it immediately. They're paying back the money. In fact, the money's being paid back over this weekend, so they're doing it immediately. But, yeah, they ought to have an independent audit of this and to give confidence back to the system, and they're also doing that. So they needed to do this. There was an error just like this in 1998 when this report was first created in the previous administration, but it happens, and, you know, they're dealing with it.
Mitch Daniels has built a reputation based on fiscal management. Does this harm his reputation?
I think it does. And not only has he built a reputation built on fiscal management, but he has also held everyone before him to higher standards. And he has been very critical of any mistake that happened before his administration. So he's really set himself up to be criticized heavily for any mistake his administration makes. And when you make two like this, especially when he sort of made light of the first one a little bit, so then to come back and have something else like this happen, it's pretty serious.
And it was announced while he's out of town.
Yeah, I think
coincidentally.
I think that does add to the difficulty here for the governor, because it looks like he's ducking the whole issue, and in fact only responded to some media when it was suggested that Adam Horse, the budget director, was at fault here, and that's the only reason he fired back, because he wanted to make it clear that he didn't believe that was the case. I think Leslie's right on the money when it comes to the way it was handled in December with the first error. And I think that just compounds the problem for the administration now. And I do agree with the idea of an independent audit and a commission that looks at this, because this is a very serious problem in terms of competence.
And John Gregg's trying to make it an issue in the governor's race. He's already suggested reorganizing OMB, and he's challenged Mike Pence to speak up. I mean, how far can he carry this?
Oh, I think he can carry it quite far. I mean, you're talking about, again, $750 million. And when you talk about the governor's legacy, what's interesting about this is this same mistake will repeat next year. So there will not be any money going back to the taxpayers. That $2 million was this is the first year of the two-year budget. And that money was I don't want to say appropriated, because that's the wrong word, but put in the wrong fund.
It was misidentified.
It was not included in the distribution calculation was wrong, because there wasn't the right information
right.
in the calculation.
Right, and it's going to be wrong again next year, because it was done for 2 years based on that same thing, weren't it?
That's not my understanding of that.
Really?
They've corrected
But they have $200 million less.
That's right. It does affect the bottom line of
so
the state.
Whether there will be a distribution or not.
No, there
distribution will
occur.
The money did come in. I mean, the money's come in,
yeah.
And it will be distributed as it's come in. And so it's not money that the state has to come up with on its
right.
own.
The surplus will be
14% of you had to get above 14%. And doesn't this reduce the surplus?
Oh, you're talking about the surplus.
Oh, yes. You're talking about for the taxpayer refund.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm give Mike a chance.
The surplus is going to be even bigger than projected. It's going to be $1.85 billion. And they're still on target to give back at least $65 per person refunds.
Why is Mike Pence unavailable to talk about this?
Mike Pence, has he been asked about it by you?
He has, yes.
Yeah.
What did he say?
Yeah, I asked for a comment, and
he was unavailable
for comment.
But, you know,
he's in a position where anything he says is going to be viewed as criticism of Mitch Daniels.
And you just saw a poll last week that shows that 71% of the people don't know who you are. You're going to try to do everything you can to keep this kind of story out there as long as you
possibly can. But in light of that, it also showed that he's only 13 points down.
Well, it did show him only 13 points down. Where I come from, 13 points down is a pretty big margin. So, you know, but it's pretty tough. But as far as long-term reputation goes, this is not going to have any effect on Mitch Daniels' long-term reputation.
So you don't think it has any effect on the taxpayer give back at all?
The understanding at this point is that it does not.
Not
well,
a dollar.
I have to say, clearly it does have an impact. But what they've done is they've found other ways to save money so that the taxpayer give back is going to be what they had projected. But clearly, if they didn't have to pay out this $200 million, it would have been higher.
And if they had paid it out this year, they would have been paying it out of money that they didn't have.
They never intended to pay it this year.
Well,
it was always
supposed
to be
next
year.
That's because they changed the formula
during the legislature.
Because if they hadn't changed it, they would have been giving back money they didn't have.
The legislature changed the
formula. Time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, the Daniels administration misplaced and then found $500 million. How is that best described? Your choices are A, negligence, B, incompetence, C, good fortune, or D, it's unexplainable. Last week's question was, should Indiana return to one-class basketball? 49% said yes, 42% said no, 9% said try two classes instead of four. To take part in the poll, just go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Democrat John Gregg will propose lifting the state sales tax on gasoline, a move that would save consumers 7 cents on the dollar when they visit the gas pump. It's an idea that came up at a forum on ethanol production in Indiana. Governor Mitch Daniels appeared along with the two leading candidates to replace him, and John Gregg told the audience that he will have a plan to cut gas prices within the next 2 weeks. Outside the hall, he confirmed he's planning a proposal to remove the sales tax on gas, something Frank O'Bannon did when he ran for re-election in 2000.
It's obvious right now that the state has a windfall because of the high gas prices with the sales tax going in, and we're taking a look at that and studying it, and we're basically 99.9% to where we need to be, and we'll be announcing it soon.
Clearly, that would take an act of the Indiana General Assembly. I think it's
Frank O'Bannon did it without the General Assembly.
I believe that's, I recall that happening. But I believe that the Attorney General of the State of Indiana has made it clear that the Governor of Indiana does not have the unilateral authority to suspend the Indiana sales tax on gasoline.
And that's Mike Pence. Mike McDaniel, is that a winning issue?
Well, first of all, Mike Pence has got that absolutely correct. In June of 2007, Chief Deputy Attorney General Greg Zeller at the time wrote an opinion for the Attorney General, which he forwarded a letter to the governor's office saying that they could not unilaterally dismiss sales taxes on gasoline, that the governor did not have the authority.
But that's just an opinion, right? What O'Bannon did was make an emergency
because
order.
Because he said there was an emergency.
Right.
And there's clearly...
Meantime, we don't know what John Gregg's plan is yet.
Right.
But he suggested that he might propose doing this permanently, which absolutely would require the help of the General Assembly.
Well, I don't understand this concept of that there's anything wrong with proposing something that requires the General Assembly to approve it. That is the strangest answer I've ever seen to a proposal. I mean, I hope Mike Pence is going to propose some things that might require approval from the General Assembly.
My point is, you're speculating that he's going to do what Governor O'Bannon did. That was where you're going with this question.
Well, it's a similar move, but apparently it's not going to be identical.
Well, of course it can't be, because he knows it requires legislative action.
Yeah.
And if it requires legislative action, by the time the legislature convenes again in November, if gas is still $4 or $5 a gallon, then you're going to see a lot of people clamor for this kind of activity. Yeah. And you may see a proposal that would somehow put a threshold on cost of gasoline where you do this automatically or something like that. You could see that kind of proposal, sure. But he can't do it unilaterally, clearly, and he has to have the legislature do it. And so he knows that. But like I said, when you're 71% of people don't know who you are, you got
to
do anything you can.
He's not the incumbent. Obviously, he can't do it unilaterally. What are we talking about here? He's a candidate. He's not the governor.
If he's proposing that the governor do it, he's
wrong. What is interesting about this is the governor can see fit not to collect sales tax from Amazon.com, regardless of whether or not they're covered by the statute. He thinks he can...
Give it your best.
I'm finishing it,
Michael. You didn't let me finish.
I'm finishing it. When he says he doesn't want to take it from Amazon.com, that's okay.
Yeah.
But it's not okay when the average person's going to suffer.
There you go.
Yeah.
You surprised to see this come up?
No. And as to your question of whether it's a winning issue, I think it's a very populist issue. And it's bad public policy, but it's a very populist issue, and it's put Mike Pence on the defensive. And that's exactly what John Gregg has to do at this point.
For anything else I want to clarify, I'm picking on Mike Pence's answer, not Mike McDaniel's answer. I can pick on Mike McDaniel, but that's not what I was doing. I do think it's a great winning issue. It drives people crazy that they have to pay the sales tax
on top of the gas tax too. Yeah.
Yet another Indiana politician is facing questions about his residency this week. 5th District congressional candidate David McIntosh works in Washington, D.C., but says he remains an Indiana resident and voted here in 2008 and 2010. McIntosh held a Virginia driver's license until recently. A campaign spokesman says he was forced to get the form for a Virginia driver's license requires an applicant to declare he is a Virginia resident. McIntosh, who rents a home in Anderson, sought and received a letter from the Madison County prosecutor, Rodney Cummings, that says he may vote and seek office here. But two of his opponents in the GOP primary battle to succeed, retiring Congressman Dan Burton, think it's an important issue.
Questions are, how does someone live in another state and vote in our state? That's the basic question.
My house is right down the street. It's not out east somewhere. And in fact, I have an Indiana driver's license, not a Virginia driver's license. I think that's the issue. People want somebody who lives here who's going to represent the 5th District.
John Ketzenberger, is that just a political problem, or does McIntosh have legal troubles too?
Well, we talked about opinions, and we've seen in the Lugar case that opinions can mean one thing or another, or maybe nothing at all. So he may actually have a legal problem here, but he certainly has a political problem, and so it doesn't matter whether he has a legal problem. You see the two of the other leading candidates who are hitting up on this, And to see John McGough on the offensive like this, it's going to be a tough campaign. So he definitely has a political problem.
What does this tell you besides the fact that McIntosh is doing well?
Well, it tells me that, yeah, that they that these guys want to go after him because they're looking for something. But with so many candidates, if they all decided to go after him on it, he's got a big problem. I mean, they could knock him off that leaderboard pretty quick.
And another candidate, Wayne Siebold's, got an ad out that says that I'm from Indiana and I live in Indiana. I mean, everybody's playing it.
Look, you know, this is a problem if all of the other candidates put money behind it. If they start talking about it in paid advertising, if they start talking about direct mail, there are enough candidates in this race that you only have to knock somebody down a few percentage points to be relevant in a hurry for these other candidates. And that's if they all decide to do that, then this is a problem. But you got to put money behind it to make this work. If not, this is a five-day story or a three-day story, whatever it might be.
McIntosh, if he's got a problem, it's that he declared that he was a resident of Virginia.
Under the penalties of perjury.
And then to vote in Indiana, declared that he's a resident
here. Penalties of perjury.
He says he voted using his passport. He says he had legal advice. I mean, he didn't have to rent a place for several years here as he did.
You don't have to live in the district.
But it strikes me, if he's got a problem here, it's because he was too diligent and misinformed.
Or he tried to have it both ways. One way, you know, another way to look at it, the same in many ways, it's the same thing as Charlie White. Okay, he tried to have the cake and eat it too. He didn't have to be a resident of Indiana to be elected from Indiana. I agree with that. The same reason that Senator Lugar can be on the ballot, even though he doesn't live here.
No, does have to have 30-day residency prior to the primary. He could easily have just come in now and rented a house.
I don't even think he needs to have that.
Not for Congress. You don't even have to live in the district.
You don't have to be
in the district.
You don't
have to live in the district, but you got to live in the state, don't you?
You
got to be in the state.
Yes.
Well, he was in the state, arguably, for 30 days beforehand. But the problem is not that. The problem is swearing two different oaths that he's a resident of one state and another state. That is a legal problem. And with
but somebody's got to challenge it. Why hasn't somebody filed a complaint?
I don't know. I'm not running their campaigns. But, you know, with all due respect to Rodney Cummings, McIntosh's buddy, he's not authorized to give opinions.
But his opinion applies to the 2012 election, and he's okay. Nobody disputes that he's got a problem this year. His problem is in 2008 and 2010, if he has one.
His letter is worth as much as you putting it on letter and signing it, okay? He doesn't have any statutory authorization to offer opinions.
Senator Richard Lugar reacted this week to the political attacks that forced him to pay back taxpayer money spent on hotel visits in Indiana. Senator Lugar was all smiles as he posed for pictures with contributors at a downtown fundraiser, but his campaign continues to be dogged by residency questions, including one about the use of taxpayer money for Indiana hotel stays. Lugar paid back over $14,600, not the $4,500 originally identified for violating a Senate rule.
Who made the mistake there?
Well, I made the mistake, but I would just simply say I don't know anybody in the Senate who had any idea about an arcane rule that said 35 miles from so-called home base during a per diem recess cannot be reimbursed by the Senate. That's the first time I've ever heard it. And it came because of people doing negative research trying to find some way to bollocks up our campaign.
So Leslie Weidmaner. I have a friend named Leslie Olson. How successful have those people been at bollocksing up his campaign?
Oh, I think this has become the big issue in this race, and I mean it's kind of amazing that it has, but I mean it's a big issue, and I think the recent poll that came out showed that while Senator Lugar may be ahead in this race, he is not at the level that you would want to be if you were an incumbent.
42-35 is the poll. An incumbent under 50.
That's bad news for an incumbent under 50, especially Senator Lugar, who's been, he's unchallenged 6 years ago by anyone in the major parties. And so for him to be at that point in the poll now has to be a big concern. And I think that the fact that they cannot define the issues in the race, they cannot talk about anything but this.
And they don't seem to have tried very hard.
Well, and every time they try, it just comes back around on them.
Well, and with this hotel bill, it was $4,500. Late on a Friday afternoon, they announced that it's actually $14,600 and paid the bill and tried to sweep that under the rug.
Yeah, but the bigger problem is the tens of thousands of dollars that taxpayers have spent to house him under the Senate rules because he doesn't have a residence here.
Because the problem here is only when the Senate is in adjournment.
In recess, in adjournment. And the other problem with it is his whole campaign ad strategy is attacking Murdoch for bringing in out-of-state money, and you're sitting there saying, okay, you're the out-of-state candidate, and you're attacking somebody for bringing in money when you're bringing in candidates. Which is worse?
Is he worried?
Well, they got to deal with it, clearly, and there's no question about that, but they have. And what they have done is when they paid back the $4,500, it was for the 10 years that they went back and looked at it. They asked the federal authorities to go back the rest of the way, which is what the difference is in the $14,000,
yeah. Right.
And they've now paid that. So they're trying to deal with the problem as they should deal with the problem, and they're doing it. But this, I find it interesting because the same survey that everybody refers to also shows them beating Donnelly in this race handsomely.
And Donnelly
and Murdoch in a dead heat.
Right.
So all those people, be careful what you wish for here. If you want to give up a United States Senate seat and give the Democrats a chance to win it back, then, you know, go ahead and do what you're trying to do here. This is just absurd, and they need to get back to talking about what the issues are of this campaign.
All right, Joe Donnelly, the Democrat running for U.S. Senate, made a statewide tour talking about one of those issues this week, jobs. Donnelly was at a local laboratory known as Xylogenics to push for a continuation of a research and development tax credit. He says it will help companies like Xylogenics develop new fuel technologies that will make America energy independent. Donnelly will take on the winner of the GOP primary battle between Richard Murdoch and Richard Lugar and says he doesn't care who wins it.
I think we can win either way. If you look at the poll numbers for Senator Lugar against myself, he's at 42%, which as an incumbent, a pollster once told me, he said, Joe, if you were at 42% a few months out or, you know, 5-6 months out, we'd probably tell you to think of other career options.
Mike McDaniel, is that confidence warranted?
Well, he's saying what he's got to say. What is he going to say? Yes, I'm scared to death of Senator Lugar. You know, I'm afraid to say that. Look, everybody knows, Democrats included, that they have a better shot at Murdoch than they do at Dick Lugar. And because Dick Lugar gets so many independent and votes in the state, always has. But I'll say this about Donnelly's jobs program. I want to thank him for endorsing the Republican state platform because everything in there, stuff came right out of that platform. And he's basically jumped on board, which I'm not surprised since he ran against Obama in the last.
I was going to say, we can anticipate that this guy is going to run to the middle like no Democrat since Evan Bayh, right?
He's clearly a moderate. I mean, he's clearly a moderate. Yeah. And that's why he's going to appeal to those independent voters who used to vote for Richard Lugar but won't anymore because he's taxed so far to the right. He's talking about what needs to be talked about, and that is jobs and research and development, as opposed to who lives where and whose money's coming from where and all the negative part of the Republican tax.
He's got a small window here where he can talk about issues before he has a single opponent and suddenly it gets ugly, right?
It's good use of the time. I'm telling you, I agree. He has used this window well. He needs to continue to use it because one day after the primary, you know, it changes completely. And so, you know, good for him for concentrating on issues, for putting forth his plan, and I hope he'll do several more because that's what's really important here.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to write a story that has something to do with issues rather than writing about residency and negative ads and all that kind of stuff. So
yeah, well,
but you're a print reporter.
That's true.
We covered that.
We covered that.
All right. Finally, another longtime member of the Indiana Supreme Court is stepping down after 19 years. Justice Frank Sullivan Jr. announced this week that he's leaving the court. Sullivan will join the faculty at Indiana University's Law School in Indianapolis. He will remain on the court until the start of the school's fall semester. Sullivan's departure follows the retirement of Chief Justice Randall Shepard, who spent 25 years leading the state's top court. Ann Delaney, does the timing of this indicate that Sullivan believes Mike Pence will win the race for governor?
I have absolutely no reason to think that even crossed Frank Sullivan's mind. I mean, he's going to be missed for a lot of different reasons. Diversity among his clerks, he's received awards for that. And the JTAC program, which automates all the courts in the state, civil and criminal, under the same house, so that we're finally in this century, which is kind of amazing in and of itself. That was an uphill battle, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Randall Shepard was a big loss. Frank Sullivan's a big loss.
Huge loss. He's been a rock-solid member of the court. He's been one of the best justices the state's ever had, and he will be sorely missed, really will be.
Will the governor appoint a woman to that vacancy?
I don't know.
He better.
I'll tell you, I do think that it would be good for the governor, some of the members of the Judicial Nominating Commission, and others to go out and encourage a lot of women to apply.
Great idea.
A lot of really great women should apply, and hopefully that will result in something.
Think that you raise a good point about the lack of a woman on the court, but no matter what happens, it's going to be a completely different court because of the changes that have occurred. We'll have three new justices in the course of, a year and a half, and no more of Governor By's appointees, so it'll be a completely different court going forward, and it has big shoes to fill.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.